Welcome to this podcast episode from the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography, published by Oxford University Press. Having listened to this life of writer Roald Dahl, why not visit the dictionary online at oxforddnb.com? The Oxford DNB includes biographies of 57,000 people who shaped British history from the Romans to the 21st century. The complete Oxford DNB is now freely available, online at home, via nearly every public library in the United Kingdom. Further details are available at oxforddnb.com. Here you'll also find more free podcast episodes and ideas for using the dictionary if you're a member of a reading group. Roald Dahl, 1916 to 1990, short story writer and children's author, written by Philip Howard. Roald Dahl was born on the 13th of September 1916 at Llandaff, Glamorgan, the son of Harold Dahl, shipbroker, and his second wife, Sophie Hesselberg, both originally from Norway. His father had given up farming near Oslo and settled with his wife and two small children in Wales, where he made a fortune as a shipbroker. When his first wife died suddenly, he married Sophie Hesselberg. She took on the existing family and had four children of her own. Roald, her only son, was nicknamed the Apple. When Dahl was only three, his father and another beloved older sister died within 2 months of one another. This was the first in a series of catastrophes and mortal disasters that dogged his life, and, he claimed, gave his work a black savagery. His mother, a devoted matriarch, ran the family. In the summers, she took them to Norway, where her family fostered Dahl's interests in insects and birds, Nordic trolls and witches. She gave Dahl his passion for reading, in particular Galsworthy, Kipling and Hugh Walpole, all bestsellers of the day. She was immortalised in 1983 as the grandmother in Dahl's book The Witches. Roald Dahl was an undistinguished rebel at Llandaff Cathedral School, St Peter's in Weston-super-Mare, and at Repton School. Those few of his contemporaries who remembered him remarked only on his competitive spirit and his hatred of authority. His proudest achievement was to invent a mousetrap that plunged its victims into a bowl of water. In his account of his childhood, Boy, 1984, he revealed the cruel flogging pleasurably inflicted by Repton's headmaster, G.F. Fisher, later Archbishop of Canterbury. Dahl claimed that the hypocrisy of his headmaster's brutal beatings, followed by pious sermons in Repton Chapel, cured him of any inclination towards Christianity. Dahl described his ferocious beatings in clinical detail in his story Lucky Break. Resisting the attractions of a university education, at 18, Dahl joined an expedition to Newfoundland organised by the Public Schools Exploring Society. In 1934, he joined the petroleum company Shell and was sent to Dar es Salaam, Tanganyika. When the Second World War broke out, he drove to Nairobi, Kenya, to volunteer for the Royal Air Force. Learning to fly over the Kenyan highlands was a master experience and provided aerial images, both magical and nightmarish, for his subsequent writing. He served with 80 Fighter Squadron in the Western Desert in 1940 and was severely wounded when his Gloster Gladiator biplane ran out of petrol and crash-landed in the Libyan desert. His injuries never left him, and he later converted the pain and frustration of his crash and 7 months spent in hospital into fantasies in the style of Biggles. He declined convalescent leave in Britain and fought in the hopeless air defences over Athens and then the Peloponnese. Invalided home to London, he was posted to Washington as assistant air attaché, 1942-3, and worked in military security between 1943 and 45. While Dahl was in Washington, C.S. Forrester, the author of many popular novels, asked him for RAF anecdotes to be used as propaganda. Forrester sent Dahl's romanticised version of his plane crash to the Saturday Evening Post, where it appeared in 1942 under the misleading title Shot Down Over Libya, an RAF pilot's factual account. In it, Dahl informed his readers that his Hurricane had been brought down in flames by a burst of machine gun fire while strafing a column of trucks. His stories in the Saturday Evening Post marked the beginning of Dahl's accidental but prodigious career as a writer. Disney tried to make a film of one of Dahl's stories called The Gremlins, 1943, which concerned a tribe of goblins who were blamed by the RAF for everything that went wrong with an aircraft. Gremlin stories were rife in the RAF at the time, and several other books about them had already appeared. But Dahl was happy to boast that he had invented them. Dahl's Gremlins story was such a success that he became a frequent guest of Eleanor and Franklin D. Roosevelt at the White House. This entree was exploited by the British intelligence services, who made him a spy, on the Americans, or so Dahl later claimed. Dahl's short stories, published in such distinguished titles as The New Yorker and Harper's Magazine, tiptoed between the macabre and the comic in a manner reminiscent of Hector Hugh Munro, better known as Saki. They were horrific, fantastic, and unbelievable. For example, lapsed vegetarians do not commonly find themselves being slit up for sausage meat in a homely abattoir, nor do babies fed on royal jelly turn into bees. In a typical Dahl story, a woman clubs her husband to death with a frozen leg of lamb and then feeds it to the detectives who've come to search for the murder weapon. Or a rich woman goes on a cruise, leaving her husband to perish in an elevator stuck between two floors in an empty house. When the stories were published in two volumes, Someone Like You, 1953, revised 1961, and Kiss Kiss, 1960, Dahl broke through into the bestseller lists and became a celebrity. His popular fame was augmented by the translation of his ripping yarns to the small screen in Alfred Hitchcock Presents from 1965, and then in Roald Dahl's Tales of the Unexpected, which ran on television around the world for many years from 1979 onwards. Preoccupied as they are with greed, revenge, cruelty, and the dark side of human nature, his stories were both bizarre examples and also trendsetters of the fashionable 1960s genre of black comedy. Not a few critics denounced his work as sadistic, antisocial, and misogynist. But Saki would have recognised his combination of the macabre with fantasy and wit. On the 2nd of July 1953, Dahl married the film star Patricia Neal, with whom he had one son and four daughters. Their son Theo was brain damaged at the age of 4 months when he was tipped out of his pram in New York and fell under a cab. His skull was smashed and he was not expected to live. But working with his consultant and a friend who was an aircraft designer of hydraulic pumps, Dahl pioneered the Wade-Dahl till valve. This non-blocking valve drains fluid from the brain and has since been used to treat thousands of children with brain injuries. Ultimately, after years of desperate illness, Theo did recover. Meanwhile, his older sister Olivia contracted a rare form of measles aged 7 and died of encephalitis. Dahl now turned to writing books for children, claiming implausibly that he had run out of plots for adult gothic horror. His first book, James and the Giant Peach, 1967, was spotted as an instant classic of children's fiction. The story begins with James's parents being eaten by a runaway rhino on a crowded shopping street, and then tells how the orphan James escapes the guardianship of two monstrous aunts, the wicked Aunt Spiker and the dastardly Aunt Sponge. One day, James spills a bag of magic worms near the roots of a peach tree. A peach swells to enormous proportions, and James goes to live inside it. With a set of lovable and resourceful insects as crew, James and the giant peach roll, float and fly from darkest rural England over the Atlantic to a ticker tape reception in New York, squashing the aunts as flat as pancakes en route. It is rude, naughty, anti-adult, creepy and sometimes cruel. James and the Giant Peach was followed in the same year by Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, filmed in 1971 as Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the most popular children's book yet. This established the tricks of Dahl's magic trade and attraction. Its hero, Charlie Bucket, is the poorest boy imaginable, one bar of chocolate a year and two helpings of cabbage as a special treat on Sundays. His four grandparents, all over 90, as shriveled as prunes and as bony as skeletons, lie huddled and hungry in their one bed, two at either end, dozing away the time with nothing to do. But Charlie's visit to the mysterious Wonka Chocolate Factory, a children's utopia of mint grass and chocolate rivers, changes the Bucket family fortunes. Mr. Willy Wonka, the imperious chocolate wizard, is looking for a protégé he can trust. He disposes of Charlie's rivals, greedy Augustus Gloop, disobedient Violet Beauregard, spoilt Veruca Salt, brash Mike TV, and chooses skinny, wide-eyed Charlie as the heir to his secret recipes, which include sugar-coated pencils for sucking, luminous lollies for eating in bed, and stick jaw for talkative parents. So the underdog triumphs, as usual, with Dahl. His dialogue smacks of Lewis Carroll, and his verses of Hilaire Belloc. A stock topic of Dahl's was to pick on human weaknesses and vices, such as gluttony, bossiness, or untidiness, and invite his young readers to rejoice in the sticky end to which their possessors come. These first children's books also flaunt the cheeky vocabulary, the zany pathos, the funniness, and the undisciplined plotting that were the pen prints of Dahl. An eminent American critic called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory cheap, tasteless, ugly, sadistic, and for all these reasons harmful, while an English headmaster charged Dahl with incipient fascism. Dahl claimed that the secret of his success as a writer for children was that he appealed to their baser instincts. As he explained in an interview, "When you are born, you're a savage, an uncivilized little grub. And if you're going to go into our society by the age of 10, then you have to have good manners and know all the do's and don'ts. Don't eat with your fingers and don't piss on the floor. All that stuff has to be hammered into the savage, who resents it deeply. So subconsciously, in the child's mind, these giants become the enemy. That goes particularly for parents and teachers." Not all teachers, parents and librarians were as keen as their children on Dahl, especially in the United States. He was accused of violent exaggerations of language and grotesque characterizations. To his detractors, Dahl was capricious. Most adults are portrayed as cruel monsters, misogynist and rude. A whole chapter in the BFG, for example, is devoted to the joys of farting. Dahl's 1983 book, The Witches, was placed on the restricted list in many American schools after parents complained that it either frightened their children or encouraged them to take an interest in the occult. Beneath Dahl's robust caricature, simple morality, and rich comic invention, critics detected an undercurrent of vengeful sadism and black misanthropy. In spite of high-minded disapproval, Dahl's books were hugely popular with children. They were inventive, rich, imaginative, surprising, funny, and full of the bizarre words that please children. Throughout the 1980s and 1990s, several of them continually topped the bestseller lists, both in the UK and abroad. When the first edition of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was published in China, it had a print run of 2 million, the biggest print run of any book to date. By the end of the 20th century, the sales of his 18 children's titles totaled well over 35 million books. They included Fantastic Mr. Fox, 1970, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator, 1973, Danny, the Champion of the World, 1975, The Twits, 1980, George's Marvelous Medicine, 1981, The BFG, or Big Friendly Giant, and Revolting Rhymes, both 1982, The Witches, Matilda, 1988, and The Vicar of Nibbleswick and The Minpins, both published posthumously in 1991. While pregnant with their fifth child, Patricia Neal suffered a series of massive strokes. Again, Dahl refused to accept the grim prognosis. He set about bringing her back into the world with a determination that shocked onlookers by its brutality and ruthlessness. She was helped through her long recovery by Dahl until she was well enough to resume acting. Some said that he humiliated her by treating her like a child and bullied her back into health with force and even sadism. But Dahl not only recreated his wife, he ran his household, adored his children, planned the garden, wrote screenplays, unsuccessfully, and continued to produce stories. Dahl then divorced Patricia Neal in 1983, and in December of the same year married her best friend and his longtime mistress, Felicity Crossland. They lived with their 8 children of previous marriages at Gypsy House, Great Missenden, Buckinghamshire. There Dahl wrote, always in pencil, in a hut in the garden. Dahl published 2 volumes of autobiography, Boy, Tales of Childhood, 1984, and Going Solo, 1986. He wrote several scripts for films, among them the James Bond adventure, You Only Live Twice, 1967, and a year later, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Dahl was as scornful of the men in suits who run Hollywood studios as Scott Fitzgerald and P.G. Woodhouse. He was also a publisher's nightmare. A publishing executive described his manner as unmatched in my experience for overbearingness and utter lack of civility. He refused a request from his editor to tone down the witches on the grounds that he was not as frightened of offending women as you are. He denounced Salman Rushdie under sentence of death by the Islamic fatwa as a dangerous opportunist, The Times, 28th of February 1989. And he accused the Jews of cowardice in the Second World War for not doing more to resist the Nazis. He told a reporter in 1983 that there is a streak in the Jewish character that does provoke animosity, and declared that even a miserable man such as Hitler did not single them out for nothing. Invited to review God Cried, an account of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, he launched a headlong attack on all Israelis, and to many it appeared an attack on Jews. By the end of his life, Dahl was bitter at not receiving the knighthood that he felt he deserved, and he became increasingly self-important, ordering a Rolls-Royce from his publishers to collect manuscripts from his home. He was 6 feet 6 inches tall, a chain smoker, a lover of fine wine, a collector of contemporary painting, a grower of roses and orchids, a picture restorer, and a gambler on horses. He looked after 100 budgerigars that flew wild around his garden. He was also a chocoholic. In the garden hut where he wrote, he kept a huge silver ball made by packing together the silver paper from all the chocolate bars he ate. He also kept there, as a trophy to show visitors, one of his arthritic hip bones which had been replaced. Dahl's public statements were often intemperate. Some of his stories about himself were as tall as he was and as fantastical as his fictions. But he had a magical touch for the macabre and the surrealist. Generations of children grew up with Dahl's books and were able to enjoy reading them to their own children. They were translated into innumerable languages, filmed and televised. Roald Dahl adored children, and they loved the grotesque worlds he created for them. Shortly before he died, he said, "I don't think you find many chaps or women in their mid-70s who think like I do and joke and fart around. They usually grow pompous, and pomposity is the enemy of children's writing." The key to his success, he frequently said, was to conspire with children against adults. Roald Dahl died of leukaemia on the 23rd of November 1990 at the John Radcliffe Hospital, Oxford, and was buried on the 29th of November at Great Missenden Parish Church. He was survived by his wife Felicity, his former wife Patricia Neal, and 4 of his children. In 2005, the Roald Dahl Museum and Story Centre was opened on the High Street at Great Missenden. Having listened to this life of Roald Dahl, why not visit the Oxford DNB online at oxforddnb.com? As well as more free podcast episodes, you'll find life stories of thousands of interesting people who shaped all aspects of British history.